reading this morning was a long one, for which I apologise to and thank Bill for. The narrative lectionary from which I take the weekly reading sometimes does that. It takes in large swathes of the text. But you know, this isn't always a bad thing. In fact, I think it's a really great thing because it allows us to hear the stories, some of which are very familiar, within their full context. And this often helps us actually understand them better. A wee word of explanation about the narrative lectionary before I go on to look at this morning's text. Us minister and worship leader types need some help. We need help in planning our worship, in our preaching plans. And there are different ways that we can go about doing this. The most commonly used preaching plan is the Revised Common Lectionary, which is a 3-year cycle of readings, which offers an Old Testament, a Gospel, a New Testament, and a Psalm reading for each week of the year. And each year begins in Advent. The narrative lectionary is different in it offers usually just one reading, and the lectionary year starts in September and has a 4-year cycle, with each year having a focus on a different Gospel. In September, we begin at the beginning of the Bible with a story of creation, and we then work through the Old Testament until Christmas, and then in the new year, we focus on the Gospel for that year and work our way towards Easter, and then onwards through the New Testament until Pentecost Sunday. The lectionary then stops, and we take a break away and do something different over the summer months, before beginning again with the narrative lectionary readings in September. My experience over the last 4 years of the narrative lectionary has been really enjoyable. At times it's been very challenging, but it has taken me to places in the Bible that I might otherwise never have gone, especially in the Old Testament. And so I hope that you will enjoy exploring the Bible through this lectionary as well. But back to today's long reading, the Samaritan woman at the well. A great passage to follow on from last week and the story of the Good Samaritan. And a good passage to explore as my first with you here as your new minister. In the reading, Jesus has left Judea and is on his way back to Galilee. He must have been in a hurry to get there because he doesn't take the safest route. Instead, he takes the most direct route. And this takes him into Samaria. Jesus and the disciples stop at Sychar and at the well outside the town. A well, we learned from our reading, that's in the field that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. This is not just any old well. It's Jacob's well. The disciples go on into Sychar to buy food, leaving Jesus beside the well, when along comes this woman, a Samaritan woman. We don't know her name. It's not a detail we are given. Although in some traditions she is given a name, and the name she's given is Photin, meaning the enlightened one. This encounter between Jesus and the woman is one of the most significant encounters we read about in John's Gospel. It is a story about transformation. This nameless woman has her life transformed. But more than that, through her, her community is also transformed. This Samaritan woman and her Samaritan community transformed, accepting and believing that they have indeed met the Messiah. Let's think about this for a bit. Starting with the woman. I want to share with you a monologue which tells the story of Jesus' encounter with her from her point of view. He was full of surprises, that man, from the moment I met him. I thought he'd push me aside like all the rest. Either that or walk away with his head in the air. He was a Jew, remember, and I a Samaritan. And worse than that, a woman. alone. Yet he stayed where he was, a smile on his face, quite happy, apparently, to be associated with me. Well, call me suspicious if you like, but I wasn't sure what he was up to. So I asked him straight out, "What's your game?" He laughed at that and then offered me a drink of water. At least, I thought that's what he was doing, though I wasn't sure. You see, he had no bucket, and he could hardly shin down the well, could he? So where was this water he was on about meant to come from? To be frank, I suspected he was pulling my leg. But I was beginning to like him despite the nonsense he talked. He had a nice way with him. Kind, gentle, a bit of all right in an unconventional sort of way. So I played along, wondering where it would all lead. If only I'd known, what an embarrassment I might have saved myself. I never know how he guessed, but suddenly he looked me straight in the eye, and for the first time I noticed his eyes. They didn't undress me like so many men seem to do, but looked much deeper, almost as if into my very soul. And then he started talking about my lovers, my husbands, my past, every detail correct. It felt uncanny, frightening, far too near the knuckle. So I tried to fob him off with some old chestnut about worship, but even then he threw me none of the usual pat answers, but a response that reached right into the heart of the matter, cutting through all the trivia. And it was after that he produced the biggest surprise of all. He told me he was the Messiah. I didn't know what to say, just stood there gawping, flabbergasted. I mean, I realized he was a prophet, but the Messiah? It couldn't be, I told myself. No way. I went back down to the village seeking reassurance, wanting someone to tell me he was just another religious nutcase. But they didn't. They were curious, wanted to see for themselves, and when they heard him, listened to his teaching, they believed he was the Messiah. Me? I still don't know. But I wouldn't be surprised, not if I'm honest. Nothing would surprise me about him. This monologue was written by Nick Fawcett, a man. And I like Nick's monologues, so you can expect me to use them in worship. He has an uncanny way of reading the hearts of the people who are speaking, even when it is a woman. But this time, I wonder if he's got it right, or whether he's actually got it wrong. This woman is so often portrayed as a sinner, a bit of a shady lady. We learn during her conversation with Jesus that she has been married 5 times, and that she's living with a man she's not married to. We read that and we all jump to conclusions. And she's been called a prostitute, a sinner. Well, of course she is. I mean, 5 husbands. Or is she? What if there was another explanation? My friend Terry offers this suggestion. There is no juicy sex scandal in this story, the way John writes it. When Jesus says she's had 5 husbands, that does not imply that she has been unfaithful. Women did not have the right to leave a husband, nor any standing in the community without a man to protect and provide for them. Instead, she suggests, it implies that her husbands have divorced her or died, and now she lives with another male family member who offers her protection from being used yet again. Nowhere in the telling of the story does the gospel writer mention sin. Nowhere does Jesus call her a sinner. Nowhere does he utter any words of condemnation of her life. We have been conditioned, through bad interpretation, I suspect, to think of her as this shady lady, up there with Mary Magdalene, as one of the bad girls in the Bible. In much the same way, we are quick to judge others when we only hear part of a story. We judge this woman and we condemn her, ignoring the fact that Jesus makes no moral judgment on her at all. So what do you think? Does it matter, though, if this lady had a shady reputation or not? The woman was an outcast. Whether or not she was an innocent victim or someone with a seedy past doesn't matter. She is on the outside. And yet Jesus reached out to her. He crossed the boundaries of ethnicity, gender, and probably 200 other boundaries to reach out to this woman in grace and in love. Jesus sees her as the vulnerable, powerless woman that she is and transforms her into one of the first evangelists. This passage rightly is a seminal one for women clergy. Here is Jesus enlisting and calling on a woman to be among the first to go and tell others about him. And she eagerly does so. Her excitement and enthusiasm is so contagious that others flock out to the well to meet Jesus for themselves. And then compare her reaction to that of the disciples who have been with Jesus day and night. And they've also been in that town too. But the nameless woman had just one conversation with Jesus about living water, and she's giddy with excitement. The disciples have had Jesus in plain sight for some time, and still they don't seem to fully understand. Instead, when they find Jesus with the woman, they're a bit rattled and don't seem to grasp what Jesus is telling them. We must wonder, too, how they could have been in the town all that time and didn't manage one conversation about Jesus. Perhaps they'd stuck to the convention of not interacting with the Samaritans. But Jesus has broken that convention and it is transforming for both the woman and the community that she comes from. This is a story about opening hearts and minds to Jesus. Unlike the Pharisees, who get an honourable, or is that dishonourable, mention at the beginning of the chapter, the Samaritans, the enemy of the Jews, open their hearts and their minds to the idea that Jesus is the Messiah that they have been waiting for so long. So this is a story that encourages us in our work as disciples of Jesus. Our 21st century task is to continue finding ways of opening hearts and minds to Jesus. In the introduction to a discussion on this passage on a web forum that I'm part of, Liz, the lady who was leading the discussion, offered this little thought. She said, in the story of Jesus' encounter with the Samaritan woman at the well, we see Jesus modeling a way of encountering others that is inviting, challenging, provoking, affirming, and in the end, transforming, not just for the one he encounters, but for a whole community. At the well, though weary from travel, Jesus discerns an opportunity for engagement. He could easily have drawn water for himself. He could easily have sat down watching the woman from the shadows. But by making himself vulnerable, by asking for help, he invites the woman to respond to him. Last week, Scott shared with us the story of the Good Samaritan. This week, we have a new Good Samaritan, the woman who is willing to share her water jar with a weary Jewish man. Jesus engages with a person far removed from the usual religious circles, and in doing so reminds us that the love of God is available for all, not just us in the inner sanctum of the church. Our church website, and I love using that, our church website, has a fabulous description of what as a congregation we set out to be on the page entitled Our Beliefs. And the one paragraph that stood out to me when I first read it was this one. Sometimes folk have an unhelpful and inaccurate image of church as a gathering of morally self-righteous people who tut-tut at the world whilst at the same time retreating from it. That's not us. That's not what church is meant to be. And that's exactly what Jesus illustrates in this story. Indeed, this story gives us the reassurance and encouragement that what we state as our beliefs are spot on. And as your new minister, I'm fully signed up to working with you and for you in living out these words and living out the phrase on the church's logo, reaching out into the community. We're at the beginning of something very special, I hope, a new chapter in your life as a church and in my life as your minister. And I'm so very excited to be here and grateful for all the work that has gone into preparing for our arrival at the manse and at the church. We are perhaps a little bit of an unconventional manse family. You will have noticed, or some of you may have noticed, that Neil is not here today. He was here last week to support me on my first Sunday, but please don't expect to see him here every Sunday. We have a system that works for us. It's a little bit like Parliament. If I want him to be here, I tell him it's a three-line whip Sunday. Other than that, I leave it up to him. And our children are grown adults who we have always encouraged to be free thinkers and to make up their own minds about things. So again, don't expect to see them in church very often. But all of that said, can I tell you that they are my biggest supporters? I could not have come into ministry without both their encouragement and their support. They also keep my feet firmly on the ground, because I can get carried away with ideas. Be warned. But I hope that we can work together to be as enthusiastic about sharing Jesus as the Samaritan woman was. That we can be as giddy with excitement about the work we do in living out our mission as she was when she ran back to the town. The church website, Our Beliefs page, finishes with this. We want to engage with our world because God loves it. As someone said, God changes people, and changed people change society. As a church, we want to be part of that process. It's a kind of revolution. That's what we are committed to. Again, I love this. And it's what today's story of the Samaritan woman again encourages us to do. Her life was transformed, and so was that of her community, by them being open-hearted and open-minded to Jesus. We can do that. And together, how was it Liz put it, model a way of encountering others that is inviting, challenging, provoking, affirming, and in the end, transforming, not just for ourselves, but for our whole community. Amen.